Okay, so now, what would Iyav's response to this be? So he's saying like this: Vayan Iyav Vayomer Me'otzarto Loi Choyach. By adding this help to an argument that already has no strength to it, you didn't accomplish anything. Your help with your power, Zroya is an arm that always symbolizes power, Loi Ois to something that has no power. Well, what he's saying is like this. Till now, everybody tried to give an answer and to explain why I was suffering, I'm a tzaddik, and how come I suffer? And why is it that the Rishoyim, who are so successful and happy, it's unfair. But now you're saying that the answer is too deep and the world is too complicated, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is too impenetrable and beyond our understanding for me to give an answer to that. So we already discussed that there has to be some type of relationship of what happens to a person to what a person is, whether we understand it or don't understand it. But by saying that it's impossible to understand, so what you're doing is defeating your argument legamli. I'm saying that I've been wrong, and so you're saying that there must be some answer to the question, and we can't explain it. But then what is wrong and what is right and what is true and what is not true? And there's nothing of that in the world. It's all confusing and it's all chaos. So you're trying to prove that there's justice by showing that there's chaos. How could you do that? Ma'azarta l'loy koyach. You already went through all your previous arguments and they were without koyach. I proved that they were wrong. And there's loyois. And how did you help them by presenting this point of view? You're just withdrawing the ability to give answers to any of the questions. Mayo achto loy chokhma. Right? What kind of etzah do you give when there's no chokhma? If there has to be some receptacle, right? It says, Yohev chokhma solachakimen. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives, Uvalev kol chacham lev nosati chokhma. There's two levels of chokhma. There's the ability to use the chokhma and the chokhma itself, each of which is called chokhma. You have to be a chacham lev to be able to deal with chokhma. And mayo atzto v'loy chokhma, but to give eitzah, which is the ability to use chokhma, to something that has no chokhma behind it at all, is useless. Tushia is another word for eitzah, right? Eitzah v'sushia. There's a fine dachistic yichilik between eitzah and tushia. Eitzah is to be able to analyze something, and tushia is to be able to use it successfully, the same analysis. L'roi v'hoidota. So, you have a lot to say, but how does all this tushia and all this eitzah help to resolve the problems that we're trying to resolve, that we're trying to deal with? Es mihi gadat tamilit, to whom do you want to extend your word? The nishmas mi yotzer b'mekah. It's like saying that your argument must be coming from someone else. Someone must have sent you. I know you. You're an intelligent person. You wouldn't be able to say this kind of thing. You must have been sent along by someone else. I had a very interesting experience, and maybe it's today. Just the about 25 years ago, I went to the top rov in a certain very large international community, and I discussed certain things with him, and in the end he told me about something. He said, look, they're trying to build an eruv in Flatbush. He says, I'm old and I'm weak and I don't have the courage to oppose it. He says, but there are going to be a lot of people who will do it, and you've got to fight. and stop them from doing it. It's full Shabbos mamish. It's a terrible aveda. And he said, I'm too weak and too old to do anything about it. But please take up the battle and do something. That was the words of the old Rav. Sure enough, about 3 or 4 years ago, the son of that Rav went and was one of the prime movers in that. So I went to him and I told him many reasons why it's the Shaloi Kedin and it's wrong to build it. So he couldn't answer any one of them. And he turned to me and he says, who sent you? Someone must have sent you to me. You can't be telling me your own arguments. You must be an agent from some kind of group. So I told him, you're absolutely right. Someone Taka sent me. And now I'll reveal to you who sent me. I said it was practically the dying words of your saintly father, who told me that no matter who it is, try to stop it, because it's evil incarnate. It's the worst thing in the world. It's massive full Shabbos. That's the one who sent me. And he was in a state of shock. I don't think it changed anything. But I sometimes see these words as me, he got it milan, the nishmas, me, yotami, neka. You know, he is saying to his friend Bildad, who sent you? Right? You're telling me such mystical arguments, but I know you. You're a rational person. You're not someone who covers up his ignorance with some kind of mystical statement. You have something to say, say it, and just don't tell me words like this. It sounds like you've been sent by somebody to tell me these kinds of things. Now, what follows over here is very strange, because Eve is going to make a statement really saying, I agree with you. I agree that whatever HaKadosh Baruch Hu does is so deep and impossible to penetrate. And the things that we could relate to in the Bria are of that nature. Kol Shekhen, the things that are higher and deeper than that. And Eve is going to take the arguments of Bildad and use it against Bildad by saying, I know about all these things that you tell me. And yet, rather than convince me that there's justice in what's going on in the world, I'm still insistent upon demanding that I do have a clear explanation, and there must be something on my level that could be told to me, and not something on some deep and mystical level that's beyond my power. And he starts with his understanding of the hidden world. That there are some kind of thing which could be called refoyim, right? Even in this past seder, we have a couple of different creatures that were found in different regions close to Eretz Yisrael, and the pasuk keeps saying, these are not the refoyim. These are not the refoyim. These are called emim, and these are called zamzumim, and they're different ones. They're not the refoyim. Don't make a mistake. And finally, when it comes to Eretz Oig, so it says, Hahui Kori Eretz Refoyim. Refoyim is a name for people or beings that when you even think of it, you tremble and you fall apart, like the word Rofu Yedeyim. That's why they're called Refoyim. Or Refoyim Yicholulu. Right? Refoyim exist in hidden chambers beneath the earth. Mitachas Mayim V'Shechneihem. Below the water, below the dwellers of the water, the whales and the tiny creatures and all those living things that dwell in the water, there's a floor to the sea. And beyond that floor, there's a hidden world. And in that hidden world, below that, there's certain tremendous forces called Refoyim. Now the truth is, Rabbi said that. We know all this, of course. You know, when a volcano erupts, so where is all that power coming from? Where is it all? The unbelievable force that's spewing out. It could explode a half a mountain that has the force of 1,000 hydrogen bombs. And where is all this power? So the Torah says, yes, it's below the water. Below the water, there's a rock in the bottom of the sea and a crust of the earth. And below that, there's some kind of magma and heat and immeasurable force that exists all over the world. The entire globe is covered with that. And then above that comes what they call the crust of the earth, and in the face of that force, the mountain is nothing. If there's a tiny little hole that lets through the power just could go all the way through and explode the entire mountain. And it's immeasurable. So what we're saying, the Chazal say that the Olam is like a pot cover. And actually Chazal was describing it. It's like the cover of a pot, and this boiling material beneath that with a big flame, and the entire world is like 1/60th of the Gehenna, which is below that. And Chazal say that within this power that we could measure is the world of Gehenna. In fact, they use it la'alocha, right? Because if Gehenna has it in like a fire, and it heats the water that comes out from some kind of hot spring, so then that water is told as sa'ur, and it's also to cook with it on Shabbos. And that's where the Chametz come from. And Chazal use it la'alocha la'maisit, to define Gehenna in physical terms that give it a status in Hilchos Shabbos. So that's the first thing he has mentioned. Or Torafoyim Yechalolu, the deep caverns in space below the earth, below the sea, below the creatures that live in the sea, there's certain monstrous forces called Refoyim. And to HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Oren She'ol Negdoi. And that world of She'ol with all those forces, that's nothing. That's uncovered. As far as we're concerned, it's hidden and covered. And if we ever see some manifestation of those forces coming through the earth and unleashing its fury to the world around us, that's just a hint of what power lies beneath. But by Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's all open and it's uncovered. Ve'ein k'such l'avadon. And the world of avadon of Gehenim to him is totally revealed. There's no clothing to cover it and to hide it. And then there's noitet sofon al toihu. Right? Noitet sofon al toihu. Because I'll always say that the world is like an aksadra. There are three sides that are enclosed and the fourth side is open. And which is that fourth side that's open? That's the sofon. In the ancient world, they didn't speak of a door that was uncovered. Because the end of the civilized world, the end of the continent, in fact, not a civilized and uncivilized, the end of the continent just end in a landmass that's fit for human beings. But in the north, when you go further north, and the ancients speak about this, there were people always who went further and further north, and then you reach a point where the trees disappear, and then where the grasses disappear, and then where there's nothing but ice and snow, and beyond that point there's just the devastation and desolation. And that's what the Poshib Shat in what's meant, that the fourth side is not enclosed, the fourth side is not protected, it's just open and it's subject to chaotic forces that rule it. And today we already send explorers down there, and they could go with their sleds and dogs and cover a certain amount of land and make a spot appearance on the North Pole or whatever it is. But the South is separated completely by a sea. It's the Antarctic Sea. There's no connection between the continents, the inhabited continents, and the South Pole. There's a landmass on the South Pole, which you don't have in the North. But Midas Kisa, there's no connection. A boat could navigate all around the world, and there's warm water and unfrozen at all points. There's never any ice connection between the continents and the South Pole. And that's why Chazal always gave it that, speaking of Tzofen. Tzofen also means the hidden place, right? That's what the word Tzofen means. And Dorim is like the inhabited place. That's actually the Yeshayim say that Dorum, right? Dor is to live, and Rum is hide. and Mizrach is where the sun shines from, and Maariv is where the sun sets and it becomes Erev, and Tzofim is the mysterious side which is hidden. Noite Tzofim al Toyu, right? Tzofim spreads over a world of chaos, and Toyla Eretz al Galima, right? The ancients knew, Rabbi said, that the world was hanging in nothing, in empty space. Toyla Eretz al Balima. Of course, Chazal give drashas, and they say the word Balima is Misha Boilei Mestiv, the Schus, the world continues to exist, and the Schus of people who hold themselves back from speaking Zoram Asurim, Lashon Hara, all words that shouldn't be spoken. So it's a play on words. From the word boiling, Balima is actually like a noun, the act of being boiling, the act of shutting, close the mouth of the person who would love to say something and controls himself and doesn't say it, and his chus is endless. And the Pashup Shat Balima means there's nothing. It's not ki'ilu, the world has to be supported and held up by something, because what could that something be? It's rather that there's space and the world is held because it just hangs in space, right? The forces of gravity and all these other forces that make different parts of the Vriya relate to one another. But, and if they wouldn't be there to relate, and if the world wouldn't be whirling around the sun and so on and so forth, it'd still be staying without any support. It's Toyla Eretz al Balima. And that's what Rashi says. Ein klum b'yisoid. There's nothing there. Whatever exists is held in its place by Zoyav Shal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's why it exists. If you want to measure power of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's referred to again and again, and this is the first time in Iyad that is mentioned, Agavurcha, and later on it's mentioned again and again about the Hashkocha that we see in the rain. These things are so revealing that a person cannot help but be a mamon, and it's used as constant proof. The Rebbeinu Shlom gives life through the rain, and he waters the soil, and that water forces life-giving plants and growth to come out through the earth and to absorb the power of the sun. Like I said the other day, if you stop to think of it, it's just mind-boggling. You know, we could study it, we could observe it, but let's just think of that system. The sun is pouring out an enormous amount of energy and power, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts countless little leaves and little blades of grass and little tiny green things, and each one of them has a complex chemical system that's impossible for a human being to reproduce, and each little tiny molecule is able to pick up and capture that impulse of power that comes from the sun and to convert it to sugars and to foods that have the ability to be digested by a person or an animal, and are able to take the material from which human beings are made and keep them alive and give them thinking and understanding and energy and power. Just the whole idea of how that limitless energy coming from the sun is able to be absorbed and used by our bodies through all these different transformations. But it is something that if a person isn't a mamon when he sees these things, then he has no seichel at all. But just in a much simpler level, HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends the rays of the sun, that very same sun that's going to infuse its energy into us through all these different causes, that very same sun, just to its power of heating, takes the millions of square miles of water in the ocean and sucks up the pure water itself and leaves the salt and everything else behind, and invisible to anyone that billions of tons every single second are being lifted up out of the ocean in the form of water vapor and turning onto a high level in some stratum of the atmosphere, miles up, they coalesce and become clouds, and the clouds contain such mind-boggling masses of water, and then this water is carried around the world through the churning of the earth, through the rotation of the earth, creating winds and air mass movements, and it brings it all the way around tens of thousands of miles to go down over someone's farm, and then the command is given and the masses of water are released in tiny little droplets, just exactly the right size that it shouldn't do away with the earth and turn everything into mud, just exactly the right size that it should penetrate the hard and rough soil, and it should go beneath the plants and bring out the life that's hidden in them, so that they could use the oxygen and the hydrogen and the that's hidden in the water and break everything apart and turn it into energy, into life-giving products. And even when you look at it, you just turn up your eyes and you look at a cloud. And you think to yourself sometimes, what do you think? You see a black cloud and you say, uy vey, it's going to rain. Or you say, it's dark, I would rather the sun shone in its light. Of course, these are all reactions. But sometimes give a thought and say, do you know what that cloud is doing? That cloud right now contains the billion tons of water, and it's just hovering above us. Anything that weighs that much should come crashing to the earth, and yet it's suspended in the air. And that cloud is soon going to release that water that it has in fine droplets, and it's going to travel for thousands of miles, releasing water as it goes, picking up more water from the rivers and storehouses of water below it, and retaining its own weight and constantly providing a source of life and a spraying of water to all the humans below it. What's happening over here is Tzorer Mayim Ba'ofov. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gathers all that water in its clouds, Nivka Onan Tachtov, and the cloud doesn't split and just break open and fall apart and come dashing and crashing to the earth. It never ever happens. In Ma'aches B'nei Kisei, right, that refers to the Olam of the Kisei HaKovod. The word Kisei, though, is written with a hey, and we know that Kisei should be written with an aleph, and most likely because the word Kisei with a hey means covered up. There's a Kisei HaKovod, but we can't relate to the Kisei HaKovod. That's L'mayla min Arakia. That's Ma'isim HaKovod. But what we do know is that there is such a creature called Kisei HaKovod, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And that's part of the transmission of his Hashpoah to the world, and which the Novi speaks of. And all of that is hidden from us. But Ma'aches B'nei Kisei HaKadosh Baruch Hu holds on to it and spreads with a below it Anono his cloud. And of course you know that Chazal used this pasuk in describing what happened when Moshe Rabbeinu was up in the heavens to take away the Torah from the Malachim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him that you have the answer to the arguments of the Malachim. But in order to convince them of that answer, there's only one way, and that's to hold on to the Kisei HaKovod. Echoiz es Kisei HaKovod. Shenema ma'achis b'nei Kisei. So in that medrash, in that Maimon Chazal, the one who's holding on to the Kisei is not HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but it's Moshe Rabbeinu. And ma'achis b'nei Kisei, he was told to grab onto the Kisei HaKovod. And what it means is to show that man has the koyach to penetrate the heavens and to make his way to the Kitzei HaKavod, meaning to come close to Hashem Yisborach and to rise and to use the Torah for his shleimus, something that the Malachim can't do. But that's a hidden meaning in the pasuk. But the pasuk, the meaning of the pasuk is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu releases through the clouds all the hashpah and all the might and power of the hidden world of the Kitzei HaKavod, and has all that koyach sent down through us. And one of the agents that carry that koyach to the world, it's like a malach, is the cloud. And the Rambam points this out, and he says that sometimes the use of the word malach is interchangeable with that of a natural force, which HaKadosh Baruch Hu instilled into the Bria. And he quotes the pasuk Oysa Malach of Yuchos Mishors of Eish Lohei. So when there's winds and clouds and lightning, so these are agents of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Oysa Malach of Yuchos, his malachim, his agents are these winds. These winds are not just winds that blow. They're forces that carry out HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Yotzen in a similar way to the malachim carrying out its Yotzen. Mishors of Eish Lohei. And they all are agents of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and they carry his strength and his hashpah and his influence and his will to the world. Choy k'chog al p'nei moyev atachlus orim choyshech. You know what that means? You take a look at the sea, and the mighty waves come one after another. It's just a fantastic sight, and you could just go down to to where the sea meets the earth and see it yourself. And when the tide is coming in, the sea rises and there's another wave and another wave and another wave, and it seems as if these waves are piling up and about to invade the earth and about to wash over the civilization that's adjoining the earth. And they come and come and come, and then they stop and they reach the borderline and they retreat. And you realize what the pasuk says, Choik Chog al Pnei Moyim, the Eibush has set rules, and he encircled the sea with a set of limitations. Atachus Orim Choshech, and this will last as long as there's light and long as there's darkness in the world. And just to give you an idea, of course, of what could happen if the rule is one flash of a fraction of a second allowed to be broken open. You take a look at these tidal waves, tsunami, that they began to call it by, and the manner in which they just could obliterate entire countries and millions of people in whom they stopped counting already, and everything just suddenly disappears because the choik chog al pnei mayim was allowed to be removed for a split second. So it's just an illustration of the chaos that's possible if the limitation is withdrawn for a fraction of time. The kolshken is this tide, this force, this limit, this gvul, weren't there in the first place. And that's actually what happened. There was a time when it wasn't there in the first place. That's what it says. V'loretz hoysa soyu v'voyu. And by Yomer Elokim Yehi Oyer, at once there was Oyer. So then HaKadosh Baruch Hu said there should be a separation, the Seiruah HaYabosha, and the dry land should separate itself, and the Yam should be given a limit, like the pasuk says in another place in Yom Ha'Oyma LaYomad Poi Sovoy. He tells the sea, till here you could come, and this is as far as you could go with the mighty power which exists in your waves. And this is what the pasuk is saying. Actually, that's what atachus oirin koishich, because right after it says toyu vavoyu v'ruach lekim rachefes al pnei amoyim, right then it says v'yomer lekim yehi oir. That was the beginning of changing all that and placing of limitations, was the existence of Oyer. Yehi Oyer. So, from now, from that point of Yehi Oyer, from that moment on, the sea and the Mayan was no longer limitless, but it began to be held back as the Briya emerged, like the Rotzon of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Sheshis and Mebereshis. And that's the meaning of this pasuk, that Choy Chog Al Pnei Mayan, the Eibishter puts a limit on the mighty forces of Mayan that existed before Or came into being, Ad Tachlus Orim Choshech, till when the, and this will last, till Or will coexist with Choshech as long as Yehi Or is here. So then the Seiroh HaYabosha is here. There will be a limit on Mayan that goes together with the Briya of Oyer, Ad Tachlus Oyerim Choshech. That's the deeper meaning of this pasuk. Next come another pasuk that Chazal quote, and the Gemara talks about it in the Agadot of Ma'aseh Bereishis in Masechta Chagiga, Amudei Shamayim Yireifofu V'yismuhu Migarosoi, that there's pillars that hold up the heavens, and they're, Yireifofu means they're ready to collapse. They're flailing back and forth, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'yismu migarotzai, and he made a gara and shouted at them, and then they stand in shock and they freeze and they don't move any longer. Chazal refers to this in the Agadot of Ma'aseh Bereishis, which of course, as I mentioned frequently in the past, the Ma'aseh Bereishis is something that contains the deepest secrets of the Briya. And it's only second to Maasei Merkava. And everything that's said about them is only reserved for the greatest of all the Chachamim and for those people that it's shaykh to reveal Maasei Bereishis to. But Chazal put a stress on this is one of the 10 forces used in creating the world is Gevura. Right? There's all different inyonim of the Zamir and so on. And Ge'ora is one of them. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world with Chochmah and Tfuna and Das, and Hashem B'Chochmah Yosod Oretz, Koinen Shemayim B'Tfuna, B'Das, Tehoimus Nevkol, and Ge'ora is one of them. And the Gemara quotes this Pasuk and said that the material from which the world was made is Yireifofu. They had no connection one with another. There was primeval chaos that kept all these forces from relating to each other, and then there was a gara, and the gara means HaKadosh Baruch Hu pronounced his rotzayim that this world should no longer be just a mass of unrelated material, but that it all should form certain shapes and certain Tzuros and Choymer that came into existence because of the Gara of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Yismu Migarosai. And the Mefarshim just explained that sometimes you have a person who's running about and someone gives a big scream and all of a sudden he stands frozen in shock. So it's Ki'ilu. There's a shocked person comes to a sudden stop and stops thrashing about. And so too the material from which the Briya was made underwent a certain masa in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ma'aseh Bereishis and began to freeze and to be shocked and to stand. Now, this itself is of course something that's beyond our understanding. But take a look, Rabbi Tzai, in things that, you know, there's cosmologists and they're trying to theorize what happened in the early stages of the Briya, which took place in a tiny, tiny, tiny fraction of a second. And they come to points where they say it's beyond our ability to even find the words to express it and to analyze it, all rules of science seem to disappear and to break down. But when they speak of these things, they say that there was a certain period when it was formless, and then the certain powers and forces emerged and created form. They're able to measure that such things happen. Of course, we know that they happened. There never was any question. But what made them happen, what brought about the force that existed, and what directed the forces and showed them how to operate on the material that existed at that time and to transform them into Dvorim Nivroim. These are the things that are beyond the power of the Chachmei HaTeva to even relate to Bichlal. Bichoichoi Roga Hayon. Right? With his koyach, he makes the Yam Roga. Roga is, Rashi says, Kmotim Kmotim. It's rough, rumbling the whole time. The sea is never still. It's always thrashing about. There's always millions of waves and movements. You never saw a flat piece of water. You could go into a lake and you see the water is just like a glass surface. It just stays there, rests. Nothing's happening. When you go to the Yam, it's altogether different. The Yam is always screaming and shouting, and there's a tremendous amount of noise and thrashing about. That's called Roga Hayom. In fact, I pointed out in the Kinnas this morning that the word Roga sometimes is used to mean rest. So the word Roga over there is to rest peacefully without any movement. And the very same word Roga is used to mean thrashing movement that just never seems to stop at the rest at all, the opposite of rest. And that's why that Mekoinen used that deep phrase that it's hard for a person who's not familiar with the intricacies of the language to figure out, but he said, "Me rigoya li rigoya hukro." It just changed from the word, one meaning of the word rigoya to another one. It happened in a day of Menucha that the pogroms began to start in the Crusades, the time of the Crusades, and the word rigoya was just changed from one meaning to the other. V'choychoy roga hayom. And with his tuna, he breaks the power of the arrogant. Rashi brings in, Chazal say that very often the word Rohav is a reference to Mitzrayim. Because in the ancient world, Mitzrayim was the most arrogant of all the countries. They built the greatest monuments that should attest to their power. They considered themselves the most important nation and the most powerful nation in the world. And that's why they're known as the Baalei Gaiva, Rohav. The word Rohav means arrogant. And with Svenose Mochat Rohav, anyone who is arrogant and who thinks so much of himself, of his chokhmah and his understanding, will take a look at the Briya and see the Tvuna of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and realize that his tiny thimbleful of Tvuna has nothing of value at all, klapi the limitless Tvuna of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Viruchai Shamayim Shifra. And he covers, as if covered with a tent, Oihal Shafriroi. He covers the heavens with his ruach. Now, Cholo lo yodai nochosh boriach. This pasuk takes us from the top to the bottom, which is the concluding pasuk in the Memor of Iyov, where he wants to show that he too is familiar with the mysteries of Ma'aseh Bereishis. That's the purpose of Iyov in saying all these things. And when he concludes, he goes from the absolute limits on both sides. On the top, there's the limit of the heavens, that blue cover that spreads about like a tent that's covering the world. And that's merely the Ruach Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu that spreads this tent over us, which is the Shamayim. And then deep inside, below the earth, There's that nochosh boriach, there's like a snake that surrounds the world that locks it into place and prevents it from falling apart. And it's the hand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu fashioned and designed this nochosh boriach. What is the nochosh boriach? We don't know. It says there's leviyosa nochosh boriach and leviyosa nochosh akalosa. That's what's mentioned in Yeshayah, that there are two leviyosas. In the end of the year, if we have a description of this creature called leviyosa, and it describes a mighty dragon creeping through the bottom of the sea, giving out fire and light coming from the fierce eyes of this dragon-like creature, and that's leviyosa. And I doubt if we'll get to it. Sometimes I say when we'll reach the end of the year, so we'll come to the leviyosa. But at the rate we're going, it doesn't look like it. The thing, though, is the leviyosa nochosh boriach. This is one of the two names given to leviyosa, and it's a shaila and a mafarshim whether there are two creatures. They're each called leviyosa, and one is leviyosa nochosh boriach, and the other one nochosh akalosa, or whether there's one, and that he has this koyach of sometimes Bariach and Akalosa. And whatever it is, it's not important to go into the Pratim, but the idea is that there's some lower Koyach, and that lower Koyach keeps the earth together in one solid form and stops all the other Koyachs from blasting apart the earth. Now, who knows what precisely it refers to, but we know quite well, Boisai, that the world is anything but a quiet solid. It's inside is heavy objects and light objects. There's heavy material and light material, and there's, like I said before, power and force, and there's molten liquid, and there's all types of mysterious material and forces that exist inside the earth, which are way beyond us and impossible for us to ever make any connection with, and our ability to analyze it is much more difficult than to notice what's going on in a star many light years away. We could at least take the light and pass it through a spectroscope and try to get a reading and analyze the materials that we could find in it. We could determine the type of energy it emits. We could analyze its movement. So we could look at something that's 1,000 light years away and study it very carefully and get out 1,000 details. But what's deep inside the earth, we could only conjecture. And these forces were given special names, so that way below, at the other end of the distant force called Shamayim, which is Ruach Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and which is the cover that we pick up when we look upwards, and below that is Chol Olam Yodo, his hand created, and it goes through the halolim of the lower world, Nochosh Boriach. Hen Eilek Tzoyz Derochav. And these are just the tip of the iceberg, like we say, just the ends of things that are because Baruch does in this world. Umashemet dover nishma boy, just the tip, the little speck of things that could be heard of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's bryas. Ram gvurosoi miyisboina, even to think of the thunder, Ram gvurosoi, which speaks of gvurosoi shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal say lo nivra Ram el lefashet es akmumi yeshev leiv. The reason thunder was created was to straighten out the crookedness in a person's heart. A person has all these complicated thoughts and ideas which tend to confuse him and distort his understanding of life. And that's what the Pasuk in Kehelet says, Olakim Oseth Adam Yoshur. The Rebbein Shalom gave you the power to conceive Yashra's straight, simple, clear understanding. Behema Bikshu Chishboinus Ravim. And yet we constantly try to outsmart, outscheme the natural wisdom that's been given to us, that we're endowed with. And Hema Bikshu Chishpoinus Rabin, we try to complicate it and use that complicated view as a cover up for having for allowing the Yetzer Hara to get the better of us. And suddenly out of the sky comes a thunder and it shakes us up. No matter how many times we heard thunder, and Lefashik Atmumi Yeshevalev, it does something to straighten out that crookedness that we created to complicate our hearts and our minds. And when we hear the thunder of his Fura, who could fully understand that? This is Iyev's opening statement to tell Bildad, don't impress me with your knowledge of, or lack of knowledge, of the mysteries of Masa Bereishis, because I too know all about Masa Bereishis, and I've studied very carefully. And when you see, you take a look at these Sukkim, every pasuk here practically is a quote from Chazal. It's not just incidental that Iyev is claiming that he has an understanding of Chochmas Bereishis far greater than Bildad HaShuchi. Bildad HaShuchi could only speak in generalities. Amshel v'pachad imo yoseh shalom v'mroimah, who could understand it? And that's the end of it. But Iyev is able to show the tzukim that are used by Chazal for the in-depth analysis of Masa Bereishis. So he says, your understanding of Masa Bereishis is something that I understand just as well as you do. But he kept talking this time, and he expressed himself further.